Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to be talking about the Kennedy era and Vietnam, particularly about the Lee and the CIA in the assassination of South Vietnam's President Diem. So, if you're looking for a really interesting, quite accessible book on the subject of the CIA in general, with a lot of depth on Vietnam, you could do worse than read Tim Weiner's Legacy of Ashes, which presents the CIA not as the kind of elite deadly force that we see in the movies, and certainly quite deadly, but a chaotic, often very unprofessional, and kind of buccaneering Wild West outfit that emerged in strange piecemeal fashion from the embers of the Second World War in the new Cold War environment of the late 40s, early 1950s. The CIA, as Tim Weiner presents it, was born of the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, and which had been schooled in sabotage and espionage by the British SIS or MI6, and many of the characters, larger than life characters, like one of the kind of the founder figures of the CIA, Wild Bill Donovan, were laws unto themselves. And when you appreciate that in the early decades of the CIA, before presidential and congressional oversight really became powerful, that the CIA were cold warriors and believed that they were, many of them believed that they were leading one-man wars against communism, perhaps not even in line with presidential or national security policy, and that CIA men in the field were making decisions on the hoof. It helps to explain, or helps to go part of the way to explaining why quagmires such as Vietnam emerge in the way that they do. Obviously, it's not all of the explanation. So I've spoken about the origins of the Vietnam War, the Franco-Vietnamese War from 1946 to 1954 before. So I'm going to talk really about the post-1954 era. By the early 1950s, America was funding France's efforts in Vietnam. It's not that the French, that the Americans had particularly any love for the French. Both Roosevelt and Truman had been highly suspicious of de Gaulle and thought that the French had generally put in a very poor show during the war and that they had been inclined towards collaboration, which isn't perhaps completely fair. That they, de Gaulle particularly presented himself as a possible dictator, and the both men believed that France wasn't really entitled to an empire any longer. They weren't enormously inclined towards the British one, but they gave the French even less leeway. But when Roosevelt died and Truman took the Oval Office, Truman was far more guided by the new realities of the Cold War, and to which he thought, really, the French might not be very reliable, they might not be a very attractive friend, but they, if they go, the chances of communism sweeping across both North and South Vietnam are highly likely. And so it's better to have a French empire, an ailing French empire, that can perhaps be controlled financially or militarily by America, than to have nothing at all and simply have Soviet Russia, or after 1949, Maoist China, as the key players in that part of the world. So that's how we see the transition from an anti-colonial struggle into a Cold War struggle. Europe, by the early 1950s, has stabilised the spheres of influence, Eastern Europe to the Soviets, Western Europe to America and NATO, have been well established. There is little scope for rolling back communism in Europe or for Soviet expansionism either. Nuclear weapons decide that one. So Asia becomes a far more fertile ground for both both powers to challenge one another via the medium of proxies. And America's proxy is President Diem in South Vietnam. South Vietnam was the product of the Geneva Conference in 1954, where the French, the Viet Minh, and America and other interested powers tried to create some kind of resolution. One whereby the country would be partitioned officially at the 17th parallel, though up until that point from 1949 already there had been effectively two states, a North and the South Vietnam, and they were officially recognised at the conference. And the view was that there would be an election in 1956. The Americans walk out of the conference, they boycott this one completely because they know that Ho Chi Minh will win any election in 1956. The reason why is because Ho Chi Minh and the Viet Minh promised land redistribution. The majority of Vietnamese are Buddhist peasants. They dislike the French-imposed Vietnamese Catholic landowner class, and they see them as alien, foreign, and are more sympathetic towards what the Viet Minh are offering. Not that there were particularly large numbers of signed-up members of the Communist Party or people who were particularly conversant in Marxist-Leninism, or Maoism, or any other of the offshoots of communist thought in Vietnam. They simply viewed the Viet Minh as being on their side. Diem was proclaimed president in 1955. He first announced the existence of the Republic, which was recognised instantly by the US and America's allies. However, the Soviet Union, in opposition to the creation of the Republic of Vietnam, refused to recognise it as a member of the United Nations and vetoed its application. And by 1959, the state is in serious trouble. It's in serious trouble because the border between North and South doesn't work as a result of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which passes through the jungles of Laos. The Ho Chi Minh Trail is not one route, but a kind of an entire complex network of routes, taking guerrilla fighters and agents from north into the south. The Ho Chi Minh Trail would put Laos directly in the firing line of the coming conflict. The Americans became aware of the trail. The CIA station chief in Vientiane in Laos was particularly keen to destabilize any pro-Viet Minh governments that might emerge in Laos, and ensured through huge bribes that an American-friendly government would exist. And it's at this point that we start to veer off into real Apocalypse Now territory. So the CIA then came into contact with fiercely anti-communist hill tribes, who the CIA began to arm as proxy armies to fight the communists. And there is an open checkbook at Langley in Virginia for this kind of work. The ability of station chiefs and senior field agents to proffer suggestions, however kind of wild and unconventional, to their bosses back in the States, and have green lights flashing and suitcases full of cash shipped out to them to make these kinds of things happen, is really quite remarkable. There seems to be an immense amount of trust in field agents who and station chiefs who the CIA at Langley viewed as knowing what was happening on the ground. There is comparatively little oversight, and the idea that any of this might be have serious consequences again doesn't seem to really have been much of a consideration. The overriding goal was the salvation of South Vietnam by severing the Ho Chi Minh Trail. This could be done, it was believed, using guerrillas in Laos. This is what Kennedy inherits in 1960. This action had happened months before he was sworn in. And the proponents of the kind of the quagmire theory of the Vietnam War, that one president handed an intractable problem on to the next one, who handed it on to the next one, each unable to fully resolve the issue of Vietnam one way or another, seems to hold a lot of water, particularly when you look at it like this. That it wasn't simply that Truman handed the problem on to Eisenhower, who handed the problem on to Kennedy, who handed the problem on to Nixon. But at the same time, there are all sorts of free agents, particularly in the CIA, but no doubt in other American agencies and in Vietnam as well, adding to the problem, adding to the complexity of the crisis being developed in Vietnam, and making certain avenues of action more difficult, certain more feasible, and shaping and guiding the decisions that the US was able to take. I think there's an interesting comparison between the CIA and the American forces in Vietnam and the presidency, various presidencies, and the Kwantung Army in Manchuria and the Japanese civilian government in the 1930s. The Kwantung Army frequently took decisions they believed to be in Japanese national interests, Japanese kind of colonial interests, totally independently of any kind of civilian oversight. And you had two sources of policy making existing at the same time. And it's obviously the armed and ideologically charged force who's on the ground already, both in Vietnam as the Americans and in Manchuria with the Japanese, who become the more important agent of action, making decisions that then American presidents either approve of anyway, or it presents them with problems that they then have to either resolve or endorse. Kennedy looked on the guerrillas in Laos as a handy replacement for American troops. He didn't fancy sending a mass army into Vietnam. knowing probably the likely results of jungle guerrilla warfare. Using the tribal forces against North Vietnam was...
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
A good option. There's a very interesting part of Legacy of Ashes where Tim Weiner quotes a CIA man at the time, Dick Holm, and he says, and I quote, "The ignorance and the arrogance of Americans arriving in Southeast Asia, we only had minimal understanding of the history, culture, and politics of the people we wanted to aid. Our strategic interests were superimposed onto a region where our president had decided to draw the line against communism, and we would do it our way." And therein, I think you find one of the causes of America's downfall in Vietnam, and you also find perhaps a recurrent theme in American intervention. One only needs to look at things like Iraq to see clear parallels of America and. By and large, they are not alone in this. This is the kind of the crime of imperial powers everywhere, of arriving in a country like Vietnam and seeing really only their own agenda and how the forces on the ground, how the different players that they're presented with can be used to support that, and being ignorant of any other possible agendas that those players might have, great to their great downfall. So CIA men in Saigon were essentially living the life of Riley. They had huge funds. They had unlimited access to the Republic of South Vietnam, their government and army. They were there as essentially glorified arms dealers, trainers, spies, but they seemed to lack much knowledge about the enemy. They had very little understanding about the Viet Minh, who they were, how they operated, and how they really interacted with the peoples of North and South Vietnam. The rather inglorious attempts by the CIA alone to win the struggle against the Viet Minh led to Diem's government looking on America with great suspicion. Kennedy sent General Maxwell Taylor to Vietnam in 1961. Taylor heard stories about the Saigon station chief, William Colby's attempt to destabilize North Vietnam, parachuting in Vietnamese agents, going drastically wrong. By 1961, for example, 217 of the 250 agents that had been parachuted into the North had either been killed, captured, or recorded as missing, or having defected to the other side. And there was, there had been a, obviously, Vietnamese double agent in Colby's team all along. Maxwell concluded that the only thing that Kennedy could do to reinstall some faith in the Republic of Vietnam in the Americans was to commit ground troops. This was top secret. This landed on Kennedy's desk and was very troubling to Kennedy. He wasn't sure what to make of it. Taylor offered something a little more attractive as well. He said, well, we need to increase the number of agents in Vietnam, so to increase the number of CIA men. Now, this is easier to do, and this is a way of kind of increasing the commitment of America to Vietnam without increasing its commitment, so to speak. It was seen by Taylor as well that one of the key tasks that America had was to infiltrate the South Vietnamese government. It was in large part the policies of the government that were failing in Vietnam and causing unpopularity and making it more likely that the Viet Minh would eventually win. And so if the government wasn't willing to voluntarily change their policies, the Americans saw it as their role to change those policies for them. Now, in this, we're not talking about some enlightened strategy such as getting the peasants on side by offering them land or anything as sensible as that. No. The first evidence of America steering Vietnam's internal workings was the development of the Strategic Hamlets program. This policy was a disaster from start to finish. It uprooted Vietnamese communities from the land they had inherited. They had farmed for centuries, where their ancestors were buried, and move them into government-controlled, militarised areas, and devastated their livelihoods, and tore them away from the thing they had the most deepest intimate connection with, which was the land. Diem begins to really show his true colours with American backing, much to the kind of the alarm and disquiet of even the CIA. Diem seemed to be bent on creating a Catholic regime in a Buddhist country. There was widespread persecution of Buddhist monks, the revered figures within Vietnamese society. There was a mass murder of them recorded at Hue in 1963, under the nose of the CIA. This explains the iconic photo of the Buddhist monk Quang Duc. If you haven't seen it, it's well known throughout the world. It's one of the kind of the capturing images, the defining images of Vietnam in the 20th century, who set fire to himself outside the US embassy in Saigon. The protests are against the Diem government grew. Diem became extremely unpopular, and it is this thinking that starts to shift the American government towards removing Diem. The first plans to murder Diem were presented to the CIA, actually by the Vietnamese military. General Tran Van Don contacts the state, one of the senior officers in Vietnam, to ask, well, essentially, what will your thoughts be if we get rid of Diem? And on August the 23rd, Kennedy gives his nod, says, yes, this seems like a good idea to me. In a marvellously euphemistic cable, he sends to the State Department, he says, we must face the possibility that Diem himself cannot be preserved. And he says, we need to make detailed plans as to how we might bring about Diem's replacement. Which was really a nod to the CIA to go back to their generals and give them the green light and probably to devise something and then run it by the Americans when that was finally thought through. Henry Cabot Lodge, the ambassador in Saigon, cabled back on August 29th, quite explicitly saying, we are launched on a course from which there is no turning back, the overthrow of the Diem government. So no one was any doubt as to what people were really planning or intending. Lodge didn't want Diem assassinated. The State Department and the CIA were at cross purposes here. The State Department believed that there was a more peaceful way to remove Diem, whereas the CIA thought it was best done in the most direct manner possible. Diem seems to have been aware that a coup was being planned, and he even put it to one of the CIA's men who went to see him at the presidential palace, is there a coup going to be launched against me? In which the CIA were very frank and said, yes. The CIA had to be explicit to the generals to say it is the policy of the United States government that no assassinations take place, to which the generals scoff and say, well, listen, we'll be doing this our way, and if you don't like it, we just won't be talking to you about it. If you find this uncomfortable, then we won't tell you. Which put the CIA in a position where they had to maintain open ties with the generals on the subject of the assassination, something that they were probably fairly comfortable with. And on the 1st of November 1963, the coup happened. The army occupied Saigon. They seized the airport, cut the city's telephone wires, seized the police headquarters, take hold of government radio, the classic coup stuff, and assassinate Diem, who was desperately asking what America was doing. He said, what is the view of America on this? And the answer was, well, essentially, that it's 4:30 a.m. in Washington, the president is in bed. From which I imagine Diem probably drew the correct inference. Diem, from a safe house, offers to resign in order for his safety and for his family. He was fetched from a church where he handed himself over and put into the back of an armoured personnel carrier, and then was killed when he was inside. Kennedy appears to have been shocked and horrified by this, even though he had ordered the removal of Diem, and must have been in no doubt about the sort of people who would be doing the removing. So this shows either a breathtaking naivety on Kennedy's part, or a kind of cognitive dissonance between the order and the actual carrying out of it. Perhaps the most interesting postscript to this whole story is that the generals who had ordered and the men who had carried out the assassination reported to the US Embassy shortly afterwards and were greeted by the Ambassador Lodge, and in a manner of almost reporting to their masters. Okay, so time for a couple of quick announcements. I'm going to be doing on the YouTube channel throughout this week about the subject of Vietnam, and you can catch me today, Monday, at 4 p.m. on the Explaining History Facebook page, doing a live web chat on Vietnam. So if this is something you're studying, tune in today at 4 o'clock. In fact, I'll be on the Explaining History Facebook page every day at 4. Also, you may have heard me mention in the past, I'm working with a brilliant podcasting producer, AudioPie, to produce A-level and GCSE study podcasts, ideal for any topic area in modern history. And I'm going to go straight on and play you a little clip now. There's a great 10% discount that you can have if you quote explain when you sign up. Little gift here from Explaining History. Anyway, without further ado, here's a clip.
The mist of a November dawn doesn't shroud the smell of mud, dried sweat, or the latrine. Yet there's something different in the air. Silence. The guns have stopped. So's the shouting. What next? Welcome to AudioPie's GCSE series on Germany between 1919 and 1945.
During this series, to find out more, go to www.audiopie.co.uk and quote the promo code EXPLAIN when you get to the checkout. AudioPie, inspiring education.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.